You are listening to KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend. You're very welcome to Book Lovers Cafe. Book Lovers Cafe is a program of author interviews and book reviews from around the sound and beyond, and I'm your host, Chris Wilson. Today, we are going to be talking to a very well-known and beloved author in our neck of the woods, Jacqueline Winspear. She has written the much-loved Maisie Dobbs series. It's a mystery series, but so much more. And today, we get to talk to her about the brand new book. It's called The Consequences of Fear, that's being published in the spring of 2021. Welcome, Jackie. Thanks for joining us.
Hello there. Thank you very much for inviting me. Really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Well, we have talked earlier about your memoir, and now reading this new book about Maisie in the Maisie series, we've been with her now for 20 years, really. But her story begins in 1929, and now we're in 1941. Is that correct?
Yes, indeed. Okay. October 1941.
Yes. So I'd like you to introduce us to this story, as you do so well with every book, kind of bringing us up to date to where Maisie is. Could you read a little bit from the beginning of the book?
Sure, absolutely. It's not quite the very beginning, mm-hmm. but I think this will give you a sense of what's going on. Maisie arrived at the first floor Fitzroy Square office just before 11 o'clock. As she unpinned her hat and ran her fingers through her short black hair, layered in a way that enhanced the natural waves that curled around her ears, Billy brought her up to date with events at the office. There's two cases of theft. I'm not sure what we can do about it, but I'm talking to the people about getting their locks changed and securing their windows. I tell you, this looting is terrible. And according to a couple of the coppers I know, they say it's all getting worse. And the government bods are keeping it on the QT because they don't want it in the press that crime is getting out of hand. They just want everyone to carry on thinking that we're all working together against blimmin' Hitler over there and not against each other. He paused. And there's another case coming for us. A bloke who reckons his wife is having an affair with an Australian officer assigned to the RAF. Oh dear, said Maisie, I don't like those cases. 9 times out of 10, whatever we find out, it seems the couple who were so unhappy end up happy again, and we're the bringers of good news or bad who are vilified for doing our job and being the messengers. Bread and butter work, though, miss. It's bread and butter work, and we've still got another 3 small jobs, you know, basic security worries, that sort of thing. Nothing I can't look after by myself. Mainly, it's a case of settling people who've got themselves a bit worked up about what might happen to their houses while we're down the shelter, or a bit of direction about what to do with their valuables. Of course, they're the well-heeled people who can pay for the likes of us to make them feel better. Maisie and Billy pored over papers for another 10 minutes, with Maisie claiming tasks that she could fit in with her other work, a role that Billy would never inquire about, though he knew his employer was now involved in war service with a government connection. Maisie glanced at the clock. Freddie should be here in a minute, so best we put away these files. If I remember correctly, he's an observant chap. He was looking everywhere last time he came with a message. Oh, he's a quick study, miss, but I reckon he's scared too. Thank you.
Scared too. This book is a lot about fear and how fear helps people get through hard times, but how fear can also be so destructive. And as in so many of the Maisie Dobbs books, you talk about human emotions and really bring them to life in terms of just common everyday people in extraordinary circumstances. That's why I love reading these books. There's so much more to them. Let's talk about Maisie for a minute. Let's talk about how she came to you as a character. I love that story. I've read your other interviews, and I'd like to have you share that with our audience here. How did Maisie appear to you?
Well, the truth is that I was not a writer of fiction when Maisie Dobbs decided to come along, so to speak. I was a writer of nonfiction. I had a day job. Awful lot of writers have day jobs. And I had a day job. I was writing articles and essays. I was also writing on assignment on the subject of international education for a couple of journals in the UK. I was their US correspondent. And I was writing personal essays, that sort of thing. So I was actually on my way to work one day, and it was one of those days. I was in California at the time, and you know that old thing, it never rains in California, but it pours. Well, it was pouring. And I was stuck in traffic. And I confess, I can be a bit of a daydreamer at the best of times. And so I was at a stoplight, and there's nothing but tail lights ahead of me, rain coming down in sheets. And I just started, I guess, daydreaming a bit. And suddenly, at once, it was almost as if I was watching a movie, because in my mind's eye, I saw this woman dressed in the garb of the mid-1920s. She came up through Warren Street Tube Station in London, but it wasn't a metal stainless steel staircase escalator, and it wasn't a sort of electronic turnstile where you just flick your card on top and you go through. It was an old wooden escalator. It was a turnstile. And I knew it was Warren Street because I used to work in Fitzroy Square, and I knew that station. Mm-hmm. She came out. She walked down. She had a conversation with the newspaper vendor, and she went out, walked down the street, stood outside one of those Georgian houses, only it was not a terribly salubrious area at the time, and she looked at an envelope with two keys in it, and she had just rented this small room to start her new business. And that's what I saw in my mind's eye. Uh-huh. I knew who she was. And suddenly I heard all this honking and someone yelling out, "Are you waiting for any particular shade of green, lady?" You know, and of course all the traffic had moved on and I'm in my own little world. And what I will say is this, that I mean, by the time I got to work, I had a lot of this story in my head. I knew where I was going with it. And I could not wait to get home to start writing this chapter. I wrote my first chapter that day, and it actually hasn't changed. That first chapter has not changed since.
Mm-hmm.
And I've often referred to that as a moment of artistic grace, because that's how it felt. But I don't think those moments, as I have said in interviews before, I don't think those moments happen in a vacuum. And certainly a personal interest of mine has always been sort of the history of just before the Great War until the end of the Second World War and rationing in Britain in the 1950s, that chunk of time, but particularly the lives of women, and especially as we're in Women's History Month, it's a very fortuitous time to talk about that. But I just the way lives change, particularly for women in the UK.
Yes.
So
yes.
It was already there, but it never occurred to me to sort of think up a story about it, and yet it's almost as if the story found me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there you were. What's so striking is that you were in California, and you have written most of the Maisie Dobbs books being in California, although you visit home, mm-hmm. back to Kent and London as well. But the time and the place are so important in these books. Can you talk a little bit about place? And I think you have a quote that you keep with you something that helps you.
And of course, you know, there we go. Your place has always been something that's important to me. I think place is incredibly important as a character in both fiction and nonfiction. I mean, it's certainly a massive character in my memoir. It's a fundamental character. But I once found this quote that I think sums up how I feel. And it's from a book called Sissinghurst. And it's by Adam Nicholson, who's the grandson of Vita Sackville-West and Harold Nicholson, the famous creators She was the famous creator of the Sissinghurst Gardens in Kent, which was very close to where I was
white
born
garden.
And grew up. One of the many gardens.
Yes.
And in his book, he sort of closes with this, and he says about place. He says, "That is the word I now realize to which this book has been devoted. Place as the roomiest of containers for human meaning. Place as the medium in which the natural and cultural, inherited and invented, individual and communal, can all fuse and fertilize." Mm-hmm. And that sums up to me how I feel about place. And what I have certainly tried to bring to my both my fiction and nonfiction is how people affect places and how places affect people, how that all comes together.
Mm-hmm.
And I think particularly in the Maisie Dobbs series, it's looking at place as a character at the best and worst of times and what place means to people. And to give you an example, there were people who refused to have their kids leave London during the war because so many kids were evacuated, 1.5 million from Britain's cities. And because they all wanted to be there together, come what may. And then there were the people who couldn't wait to get away, that would just decamp to the country with their families. And obviously those were the better heeled ones that could afford to do that. So that's just one example. And then what happens to place, you know, and to give you an example of that, I remember when I was a kid, you know, born and raised in the country, going up to London to see our relatives in London. And there were still bomb sites around. We're talking in the 1960s and so on. And my cousins and I used to play on old bomb sites. You never knew what you might find. And in fact, I think the last East End bomb sites were actually, you know, they got rid of them when they were building the stadiums for the 2012 Olympics.
Oh, my goodness.
Hard to believe. So, you know, that's just an example, but place as a character, I think is
certainly true.
Important.
It's certainly true that the East End and Southwark and places like that have really changed. Mm-hmm. And I haven't been to London in quite a few years now, but from the pictures, it's always changing. Mm-hmm. But you can hold on to these memories of this place and this time between the wars in the Maisie Dobbs series. It seems, you know, it's so clear to the reader where you are and what it looks like, and it's so precise. So I really love all those details about the rooms and the china and what people are wearing and just everything about it brings it so alive. And I think that's another reason why not just the characters and not just the stories. The story, by the way, let's talk about the consequences of fear. I mean, this was an incredible book, I thought. They are all very good. But this one, for some reason, it was very frightening. It was quite the page-turner, and I'm wondering if it's because we love these characters so much. We know them so well now and seen them change. Did you have a special feeling about this book, The Consequences of Fear? Was it easier to write?
No, I don't think any book's easier to write. I think there's a distinction between easy and obviously between easy and hard, but then what is easy? You know, because it's, did it flow? Yes, it flowed. Did I know where I was going? Yes. Did I have times when I had doubt? Of course, because that's what you do when you write a book. You think, oh my God, I'm never going to be able to do this again. But I had a real, I guess every book's different, you know. I mean, writing The American Agent, I love writing each of my books because of the challenge that it presents me with. And this presented me with a challenge. in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
Writing about fear and how fear impacts you means that you have to understand your own fears. You have to go to places where your own fears reside. And so that is a challenge
mm-hmm.
as a writer. And trying to get into the heads of people that are living through the worst of times with fears that I will, knock on wood, never have to experience. And there's different ways that you do that. And it's sort of like pulling up what you know of fear and thinking, how would I... Here's a big question I ask myself a lot. How would I feel if? How would I feel if? And I try to get into that space, whether it be someone who's working for the Secret Service, someone who has the responsibility of sending agents into the field, as Maisie does in this book,
mm-hmm.
without giving too much away. And how do I feel as a child knowing fear? And children can't always express fear, but it turns up in different ways. So I had to figure out how I did that.
Yes.
Because Freddie Hackett is a scared boy.
For so many reasons. And he's an incredible character. And the way you kind of peel back the onion of Freddie, and once again, I'm not going to talk about the plot, except that there are a lot of twists in this plot and surprises. And and what exactly is happening to him and for what reasons is a big part of this book. But aside from that, you know, that plot-driven part about the mystery and the crime that needs to be solved, there's also the continuing relationships, the loving relationships of Maisie Dobbs and her group. One thing I have to say is whenever you start a new Maisie Dobbs, dear listeners, you can read them out of order because, Jacqueline, you do a great job of very swiftly and delicately kind of catching us up again.
Yeah. Every book has to be able to be read on its own.
Right.
I mean, a lot of people obviously want to read them in order because then they get a different experience of how people grow and change.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, they have to be also be read on, be able to be read as a standalone novel, for example.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so just very quickly, you know, we learn about what's been happening to Maisie and very, very neatly get introduced again to the fact that she now has a daughter and what relationship she's in now. And that's all very important. So I want to talk about how you map out, or do you map out these books? Because, you know, in a crime or a mystery novel, you know, the reader is going one direction or the other. There's little red herrings. I think that's the term. I want to say that really the Maisie Dobbs books were the first mysteries that I really ever read. I'm not a big fan of mysteries, but I am a big fan of historical novels. So now I read all kinds of mysteries, but Did you map it out? Do you know how it's going to end and what exactly is going on when you start writing a book?
I'm not a great mapper outer, I'll mm-hmm. tell you that. I'm a fly by the seat of the pants person.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a point when I start to think, okay, where do I want to go with this? The only thing I think I do that's really important to me is I work out the arc of the story, and I don't write a lot. It's a very visual thing. This all goes back, actually, to when I wrote Maisie Dobbs, and I would say most of Maisie Dobbs with one arm out of action because I'd had a horrible riding accident. And to be quite honest with you, I might never have finished the book if I hadn't had that accident, because I was determined after 6 months of sitting there, you know, basically I wasn't going to sit around and do nothing for 6 months while my body healed itself. But so I got these massive sort of poster size post-it notes that you can get, and I literally did an arc And then I notched these places on the arc where I thought something should happen, and here's what I thought should happen. And then I wrote each place, so to speak. And I sort of kept that, call it a technique, if you will, but that's a very grand word for what I do. I think one of the things that was really important to me, though, right from the beginning, not right from the beginning,
mm-hmm.
from the time I wrote my second book, because when I wrote my first book, I didn't know there would be a second book. But I realized that what I wanted to do was to create something akin to a saga. That means a long, ongoing story. And I wanted there to be an arc to the series so that I could follow not just Maisie Dolls, but this cast of characters through not only what they had to accomplish in each quote-unquote novel, but where they were going in life and how they were impacted not only by what happened in their personal lives, but by the events of the day, because we're all impacted by the events of our day.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to, and in fact, I just wrote about this in my recent newsletter to readers that, I've always liked stories that have an ensemble cast, the Magnificent Seven and Ocean's 11 to drag out a few. But so I like, yes, I've got Maisie Dobbs and I've got Frankie Dobbs and I've got Brenda, her stepmother. I've got Priscilla and her family. I've got Billy Beal and his family. And I've got Keith players, but I've got an ensemble cast, and some people I lose along the way, and some people come in from the past. That's what happens in The Consequences of Fear. A couple of people come back from the past.
Yes, they do.
And I love having that cast of characters at my fingertips. And I will be absolutely honest with you, I don't think I'm the greatest writer when it comes to plotting, but I do feel sometimes like almost like a master puppeteer, where I'm throwing things in and saying, now let's see what you do with this. What are you going to do about this, Maisie Dobbs? What will Priscilla do with this event? What's she going to do here? What's he going to do there? How will you all get from that space to that space? So it's rather a game in a way.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how else to describe it.
You described it very well. We are talking to Jacqueline Winspear, author of the Maisie Dobbs series, and her latest book is called The Consequences of Fear. This is Chris Wilson, and you're listening to Book Lovers Cafe. So I still have a question about one of your characters, even though he's not alive now, Maurice. But he's so present in every book.
Mm-hmm.
I love the way that Maisie sips her glass of sherry and sets out a glass for Maurice to have a little chat with him. And where did he come from? Where did he come from? How did you?
Oh, I wish I knew. He turned up.
I know, because
characters just turn up.
There's no clues in your memoir about him, really.
No, there's not. I mean, there's no clues about a lot of people that turn up in the book. Maisie Dobbs. Yes, mm-hmm. she came from history.
Mm-hmm.
She came from my interest in a certain era.
Mm-hmm.
And the women of a certain era, and I wanted to reflect the spirit of a generation. I have no idea where Priscilla comes from. Having said that, my dearest friends that I've known from the age of 10, apparently after they'd read a couple of books, her kids started calling her Priscilla. So what can I tell you? because maybe she's a bit like Priscilla. But so where did Maurice come from? I don't really know. I think, he is Maisie's long-term mentor. He was her employer. She served an apprenticeship with him. He directed her education. He is the wise man of mythology. He is the magician,
mm-hmm.
if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And those kinds of people that send us on our way, that send us on our journey, they remain with us. And I think that's all I could say about that. But he was such a big part of her life that even though he's no longer present with her, she will go back to basics, if you will.
That's
she
right.
will go back to her earliest lessons to try to find a foothold in what she's doing now. And I think there's a lesson there for all of us. And it was so funny because I train in the equestrian sport of dressage. And on any one day, I might be doing something at quite a high level, but I will also be doing something that a rider does on their very first lesson. And I think there is a lesson there that you know, that's what Maisie takes, that she sometimes has to go back to her lessons to be able to operate at and function at a level that she knows she can function as in her work.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Because yeah. when she hits a wall, she talks about going back to what she knows, going back to the
yes.
facts, and then yes. starting again, and not you know.
It's going back to the anchor.
Yes,
it's the anchor. What is it that anchors us? And often, what is anchoring us are our earliest lessons. Our mm-hmm. earliest lessons, our earliest lessons of how to treat people, our earliest lessons of how to be in the world of people and places. It's the earliest lessons that stay with us. You know, whether it's, you know, and you can be in a shop and you can tell the people that learned very early on in life the kind of manners you need when you're shopping. You can tell the people that didn't learn that. You
That's
know, I
right.
use that as an example.
Yes.
You know.
So there's people that, and one thing about, you know, the also in the series, there's people that are damaged. There's people that mm-hmm. maybe are the villains, but you always see the humanity and maybe the reasons for why people are the way they are. And that certainly is a lesson for us all to remember. And mm-hmm. Really, Jacqueline, thank you so much again for talking with us here in Port Townsend today, and for all of those who have been waiting for this book. It's called The Consequences of Fear, and we hope that there will be many more from you.
Well, and thank you very much.
Thank you. And
thank you very much indeed. I think maybe you should add that it's not available till the 23rd. That's the publication date, March 23rd, for The Consequences of Fear.
That's
so it's
right.
not quite in the shops yet.
Well, when this airs, it will be. It will be. It
oh,
will be.
Okay.
So everyone listening, it is available. And I want everyone, again, to join me next time to talk more about books and authors. And you can listen to the past shows and other programs, especially if you only came in halfway during this one, from the podcast page. You can make a donation to the station from kptz.org. Thank you so much, Taylor Clark, for being the engineer today. And Carl Allen is the editor who will smooth out all our mistakes. Thank you. Thank you all. And we'll see you again next time.
Thank you.